This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, Michael Grunwald, senior national correspondent at Time Magazine. He's won the George Polk Award for National Reporting, and his book is The New Deal, The Hidden Story in the Obama Era. It's about the $800 billion surplus, or the $800 billion stimulus, and we will talk with Michael Grunwald about how that has shaped the Obama presidency. Also, Joycelyn Elders, the former Surgeon General who served under President Bill Clinton, her fellow Arkansan. She's still active in American politics in Little Rock, and she will talk about AIDS in America and in Louisiana, Baton Rouge and New Orleans, among the top three cities in the United States in the rate of AIDS transmission. All this today, but first the news on 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number outside the area. It's 877-217-5757, and you may reach us via email at inkstershow@wrkf.org. We begin our discussion with Michael Grunwald, senior national correspondent at Time Magazine. His book is The New Deal, The Hidden Story in the Obama Era. Good morning, Michael.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing well. Well, your book, which is fresh off the press, is grandly detailed as far as the depth that is involved in the budget situation, in particular the $800 billion stimulus plan. How significant was this in shaping the Obama presidency?
You know, it really is, I think, one of the most important and least understood pieces of legislation in modern American history. You know, a year after it passed, the percentage of Americans who believed that it had created any jobs was lower than the percentage of Americans who believed Elvis was alive. But in fact, just about every independent economist agrees that it helped prevent a depression and end a recession. And it's also really the purest distillation of what Obama meant by change. It kept just about all of his campaign promises during his first month in office to really transform energy, healthcare, education, and the way our economy is structured. There's all kinds of stuff in it that nobody really understands.
You say the Republicans found their voice in opposing the plan. How so?
Well, it's true. I have really the first reporting. The Republicans really opened up to me and explained how even before Obama took office, they had devised this strategy of no, where they were going to oppose everything he did, regardless of the substance. And I talk about the secret meetings where Mitch McConnell on the Senate side and Eric Cantor on the House side really laid out this strategy where they were going to fight. It's funny, stimulus had always had bipartisan support. Every 2008 presidential candidate supported it. Mitt Romney had the largest stimulus plan. And House Republicans actually voted for a $715 billion stimulus plan that was quite similar to Obama's $787 billion stimulus plan. But, of course, they still went ahead and called the Obama plan the death of American free enterprise and Sharia socialism, and and never really explained how their similar plan was good public policy. But that's the beauty of being in the minority, is you don't really have to.
You say it's one of the least understood pieces of legislation in the history of the country. Why?
Well, look, we had been spending a few billion dollars a year on clean energy. The stimulus poured in another $90 billion, which leveraged more than $100 billion in private sector capital, got it off the sidelines. And just a complete game changer for wind, solar, and other renewables, advanced biofuels, energy efficiency in every form, the factories to make all that green stuff in the United States, clean energy research. It really is by far the most ambitious energy bill in history. It also laid the groundwork for Obamacare by pouring $27 billion into health information technology, which is really dragging our pen and paper healthcare system where your doctor can kill you with his chicken scratch handwriting. It's taking it into the digital age. It had the largest education reforms in decades with Race to the Top, the largest infrastructure investment investments since Eisenhower, the largest middle-class tax cut since Reagan, the largest one-time investments in research ever. So this really was a game-changing bill in lots of ways, but Republicans were very shrewd about making it sound like $800 billion worth of levitating trains to Disneyland and mob museums and other nonsense that wasn't in the actual stimulus.
There are those on the left who believe that the president didn't go far enough.
Well, it's true. And it's in fairness, look, more aid to states would have prevent more cops and teachers from losing their jobs, and more tax cuts would have put more money into people's pockets, even though there were $300 billion worth of tax cuts for 95% of the country. And more aid to victims of the Great Recession would have eased more pain, even though it did keep 7 million people out of poverty. That's true. What my reporting shows is there was absolutely no political support for one penny more than the $800 billion they got. I interviewed everybody who was in the room during these negotiations, and not only were there three Republican senators who were adamantly opposed to anything over $800 billion, but at least half a dozen Democratic senators. And that's really been it's part of the narrative of the Obama presidency, is the kind of tyranny of getting 60 votes in the Senate. He sort of campaigned as this change-the-system outsider, but he really has governed as a work-the-system insider, because bills that don't pass Congress don't make change. And he recognized that, you know, he could run around screaming and say, oh, no, it needs to be bigger, and I don't like these catfish subsidies for Blanche Lincoln of Arkansas, and I don't understand why Arlen Specter is insisting on $10 billion for the NIH. And there's plenty of ugly screaming and yelling behind the scenes, but ultimately he recognized that the important thing was to get a bill passed that every economist agrees has added 2 to 4% to GDP, which is the difference between contraction and growth.
Mm-hmm. The book is The New Deal from Michael Grunwald of Time Magazine, The Hidden Story of Change in the Obama Era. You say one of the votes that he coveted was that of Mary Landrieu of Louisiana.
Right. She was one of those centrist Democrats who didn't want to, you know, were felt uneasy about at this time where, you know, we just had this hideous financial crisis where we'd already spent $700 billion bailing out the banks. And even though the economists were saying, look, kind of need to throw money at this problem, and even though the Obama people were saying that it was going to be done as transparently and with more accountability than any federal spending in history, she felt uncomfortable about how big it was getting. And she was part of that group that said, look, $800 billion is plenty. A $50 billion stimulus plan had failed in the Senate just in September. Obama had proposed $175 billion during the campaign. So $800 billion felt like, for a lot of people, like that was the deep end of the pool. It's only in retrospect, you know, where even though it created the biggest improvement in employment in 30 years after it passed, you know, it improved from absolutely horrible to just bad. And so now that we've had 4 years of kind of bad, I think a lot of people are saying, well, what more could have been done? In Britain and Spain and other places that have embraced austerity and have actually done anti-stimulus, you've seen double-dip recession, so it's good that we haven't done that. Some people are saying, hey, we really do need more support for the economy, which, as the president proposed in his American Jobs Act, and as, you know, the sort of Paul Krugmans of the world have proposed in their columns.
So what do you think about the state of the economy now? How did the stimulus improve or not improve where we are right now as a country?
Well, one thing, I talked to Christy Romer, who is one of President Obama's economists and is also a scholar of the Great Depression. And one thing, and I hope I can say this on your radio station, one thing she said to me is that people understand that depressions suck, but if you study the Depression, you understand that they really, really suck. And as much as 8% unemployment has been frustrating and unacceptable, and really tragic, the prospect of 25% unemployment is really a lot worse. And nobody's going to put that on a bumper sticker. Things could have been worse. But people forget that we were losing 800,000 jobs a month. Gaining 150,000 like we are today is not, you know, nobody's pleased about that. but it's way better. In the same way that growth of adding 1.5% growth per quarter per year is not great, but losing 9% is really catastrophic. So I think the answer is, you know, we're not in a great place. The stimulus has made us in a much better place and has really started to transform some of the long-term goals that Obama laid out during his campaign when nobody was paying attention because they were interested in his race and his pastor and the ads comparing him to Paris Hilton. Things like transforming ourselves to a clean energy economy, reducing our health care costs, reforming our public schools, and, you know, providing some tax relief to middle-class families. This was really a very serious down payment on that.
Well, the book from Simon & Schuster, from Michael Grunwald of Time Magazine, is The New Deal, The Hidden Story of Change in the Obama Era. Thank you, Michael. Pleasure to talk with you today, and congratulations on such a comprehensive book that has interviews with more than 400 of the insiders on this deal. Thank you.
Hey.
This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Your number's 297-5633 locally and outside our area. Please call toll-free 877-217-5757. You may reach us online at inkstershow@wrkf.org. Our guest at this time is Dr. Joycelyn Elder. She was Surgeon General under President Clinton, a highly opinionated person who lost her job because of her candor. And she is still active in many endeavors and has spent some time in Baton Rouge over the last several years. But she is joining us from her perch in Little Rock, Arkansas, where she has spent much of her life. And good morning to you, Dr. Elders.
Good morning.
Nice to talk with you. Now, not to to beat the story to death, but we have talked before about the rate of AIDS in Louisiana. And Louisiana currently ranks number one in the country in terms of HIV incidence among young people between the ages of 13 and 24. 25% of all the new HIV diagnoses fall within this age category, according to the Department of Health and Hospitals. And yet we advocate abstinence training in Louisiana. Whatever we're doing, there appears to be a disconnect here. Why so?
Well, whatever we're doing, it's not enough. We're not reaching the group that we most need to reach. This is our young, our minorities, and even our elderly, you know, our old folk. So I think that what that says is first of all, we're sexual beings from birth until death, and that we need to admit that. We need to realize that all of our efforts have been directed toward preventing disease, preventing unplanned pregnancies, preventing HIV. And we need to begin to focus on how do we talk about the pleasure, really talking about our sexual acts as a pleasure, and how do we protect our people from these kind of disorders rather than just talking about abstinence? Because abstinence is not going to get it. If we're sexual beings, that's not going to get it. We're going to have to teach them how to protect themselves if we want to make a difference. So if Louisiana wants to keep spending all of their money on talking about how to not have sex, rather than talking about preventing complications of unprotected sex, well, then like many other places in the world, our Medicaid bills are going to keep going up. Our number of children are going to keep going up. And we're going to keep paying for poverty, ignorance, and enslavement.
Now, there are those who would vocally disagree with you, Dr. Elders, and I'm sure you know that, and have a great aversion to advocating condom use.
Yes.
You have a difference of opinion.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I think that everybody, all would have, we all preach or maybe talk about abstinence. Teach our children. We are not. Nobody is advocating going out having, you know, unprotected sex. But I think that we need to really talk about how do we protect our young? How do we protect our children? How do we protect our society from the complications related to unprotected sex?
297-5633 is your number. Dr. Joycelyn Elders is our guest, former Surgeon General of the United States. Reverend Gene Mills, Executive Director of the Pro-Abstinence Louisiana Family Forum, says there are two irreconcilable worldviews at play, one where teenage sex is inevitable and the other where it is avoidable. Louisiana mandates an abstinence-only curriculum, and as a result, we have the highest AIDS rate in America despite these efforts. And Baton Rouge, by the way, is number one nationally in the rate of HIV instances. Now, how does Arkansas compare, for example? Little Rock's a very comparable city to Baton Rouge as far as demographics, capital city, southern state, education issues, poverty issues. How does your hometown compare and your home state compare, say, with Louisiana?
Well, we know that the southern states, including Arkansas, are the among some of the highest rates of pregnancy, STD, you know, other STDs, and HIV. Arkansas, you know, we're probably 12 or 13. I don't know, and I should know those figures, and I'm sorry that I don't.
All right. Well, I've never heard our governor say a word about AIDS, not one word in 5 years in office. When Bill Clinton, your former boss, both in Arkansas and in Washington, when he was in office, did he talk about AIDS?
Yes, he did. And our president and governor talked about AIDS, and I, you know, but I'm not sure they were out there preaching it, you know, certainly not as much as I do, but I think they are talking about it because of the impact that it has, first of all, on our young people and on our health care system and on the problems that it causes in our society, and that we should be trying to prevent disease and stop spending all our time and effort on trying to prevent sex.
297-5633, Inkster Show at WRKF.org. Andre and Gonzalez. Andre, you're on the air with Dr. Elders.
Hey, Jim. Thanks for taking my call. I mean, as a young man, I'm 22. I graduated in 09. I see, when I was in high school, I mean, there was no way you were going to stop kids from having sex. So to teach an abstinence-only program is just ridiculous. And I think the same is true a few years later and will be as kids are exposed to more sex in the media. And I mean, it's just on their mind all the time. I don't think you're going to stop it. So you have to start teaching safe sex and not abstinence. And that's all I got. Thanks.
Thank you, Andre.
I agree with you, Andre, 100%. And that's why I said we need to start being honest with our young people, empower them with education so that they can be responsible. And we call it, it's the HER principle, H-E-R, honesty, education and empowerment, and responsibility.
877-217-5757. Our guest is Dr. Joycelyn Elders, who was Surgeon General and was commenting on these issues 20, 30 years ago before it became a national discussion.
Tragedy.
Yeah, and a tragedy. And in Louisiana, that tragedy is more pronounced than it is anywhere in the United States. And it hits the minority community particularly hard, doesn't it?
Yes. It's 2.5 times higher and young black males, or let's say young black gay males especially, as opposed to young white gay males, 25 times higher in young African-American women, minority women. So it really hits the minority community very, very hard. And the reason, well, one of some of the, is first of all, they don't know better. We haven't educated them. We haven't reached them with our message. So we've got to find the messages that reach them. And I think abstinence is not the message that registers with them and sticks with them, because they know that that's not true, that often the people that are out there preaching abstinence are not themselves abstinent.
And it's not a disease that afflicts only gay people either.
Oh, no, by no means. It's just that the majority of the new cases are in gay males, but that has no indication. We know that 50% of all the new cases of HIV are in people less than 25. So it's young people. They are much higher incidence of poverty among this group of individuals, and far more in gay, lesbian, GLBT population. But it affects everybody, the young, old. 15% are greater than 55. So that's old folk, too.
Well, would you recommend condoms being distributed at public places?
You know, anything that will protect our young people, reduce the incidence of unplanned pregnancies, STDs, and HIV, I would recommend that we do that. I have no problem with the teaching of abstinence, but we've got to couple that with making sure that we educate and offer them the resources for them to protect themselves. And if that means handing out condoms, handing out advice, making sure that they're available anywhere the young person goes and wants them. If they don't need them, you don't have to worry about them getting them. But if they need them, we want to make sure they have one.
297-5633 in our remaining time with Dr. Joycelyn Elders, a legend who is still active, as you can hear, full of vim and vigor. And what was that line you used to state, that the vows of abstinence break far more easily than those?
Than latex condoms. And, you know, and that's still so true today. I think our young people, you know, they plan to be abstinent, but if we've not equipped them with all the tools they need to really be abstinent, just telling them to just say no is not enough. We need to give them all the tools they need to resist, but more importantly, if they don't resist, or, you know, we need to make sure that they have a latex condom.
HB in Denham Springs. HB, you're on the air with Dr. Elders.
Good morning. Doctor, I'd like to ask you a question concerning the news media and television, even down to the commercials. When Channel 9 first went on the air and we started watching what was called television at the time, even married couples was not even shown in bed together. Today, they got women that hardly wearing anything advertising underwear on TV. How much influence does this have on the problems that we're having connected with AIDS? Thank you, ma'am.
Yes, thank you for asking that question. There is no question that we feel that we can use advertisement to advertise everything from toothbrushes to selling houses, but we can't advertise. We advertise Viagra all day long, but we can't advertise latex condoms on primetime television. This makes no sense at all. We need to be advertising the things that will reduce, protect our young people. You know, we see them in every other way. And, you know, the studies have shown that this does not encourage young people to be more sexually active.
Charles in Jefferson Terrace. Hi, Charles. You're on with Dr. Joycelyn Elders.
Okay, the concern I have is about how the government reinforces out of wedlock pregnancies and consequently unprotected sex through our welfare programs. Thanks.
I feel that teenage pregnancy, as you know, has been reduced by almost 40% in the last 10 years. And I want you to know that I'm thrilled to death about that, proud about that. Yet 41% of all children born in America are born to unmarried women. Only 13% of pregnancies are born to teenagers, or 19 or less. So as far as welfare programs, we know that children born to unmarried women or young women who've not finished high school are far more likely to need welfare and our government-assisted programs, because they're more likely to grow up what I call poor, ignorant, and slaves. And if we want to get them out of poverty, we've got to make sure we educate, educate, educate.
We'll return in just a bit, in a few minutes, with Dr. Joycelyn Elders, and we also have the latest from the Baton Rouge Ballet Theater. But first, we send it back to the station, and we ask for your support for WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number, and we'll spend a few more minutes with Dr. Joycelyn Elders, Surgeon General of the United States, for about a year and a half during the presidency of Bill Clinton. She served under Governor Clinton when he was governor of Arkansas. Dan downtown. Dan, good morning. You're on the air with Dr. Elders.
Yes, Dr. Elders, do you believe that opposition to contraception is due to right-wingers feeling that young people should be punished with the burden of child care for following their God-given desire for sexual pleasure?
Well, I feel that the reason that we do not have policies that are consistent with the rest of the world, and we have the highest teenage pregnancy rate, highest STDs, is really related to some of our religious documentation, our religious feelings that this is God's just punishment for premarital sex. I feel that God gave us a brain, and he wants us to use it.
Dr. Joycelyn Elders, who is unafraid to comment on issues that are uncomfortable for others. As I mentioned, there are no public officials in Louisiana talking about AIDS, and Louisiana ranks number one in the country in terms of HIV incidence among young people between the ages of 13 and 24. 25% of the HIV diagnoses fall within this age category. And when you size up the future, where are we going from here? What do you think, Dr. Elders?
Well, I think we have to be concerned. You know, the mean age of getting married is now 26. And we're saying most of these conditions are occurring before age 24. So we know, or we should know, that our young people are engaging in sex. And we should try and decide whether we're going to try and protect our young people or we're going to continue to hang on to many of our myths and ideologies. So I feel let's empower our young people so they can work to protect themselves. We all want our young people to be healthy, educated, motivated, and have hope for the future. And we do not want them diseased because of our failure to educate.
Well, Dr. Joycelyn Elders, it's always a delight to talk with you, and hopefully we'll have occasion to speak with you before the presidential election. I'm sure you have some thoughts about what's going to happen on November 6th.
Well, I think we all wish we knew the answer.
Are you and Coach Elders, your husband, Oliver, or are you still at odds about for whom you'll vote?
No, I think we'll both vote for the same person. I think the last time we were talking about whether I was going to vote for a woman, Hillary, or whether I was going to vote for the first African American, Mr. Obama. Well, that was during the primaries, and since Ms. Clinton was eliminated, I still feel that, you know, we would do well to have try a woman. But I think we're both out there doing everything we can to hopefully make a real difference. And, you know, I think both candidates have many good things to offer, but I still support Mr. Obama and feel that he has the best chance of correcting. We can't keep starting over.
All right. Well, thank you, Dr. Elders. Always a pleasure. We'll talk
to you. All right. Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye. And we're joined in studio in our remaining moments by a few people, in particular Molly Bookman, who heads the Baton Rouge Ballet Theater, that is kicking off its 2012-13 season by hosting a Utah-based contemporary dance company's performance. This is heady stuff for our city, and there will be, Molly, a performance 7:30 Thursday night at the Baton Rouge River Center Theater for the Performing Arts, and you have a spectacular performer with you.
We do. We're so excited to have this company from Salt Lake City. This is the Ryrie Woodbury Dance Company. They are so exciting. Everyone is going to want to come out and see them. And we are especially fortunate. They're spending a few days with us and going all over town, sharing their talents, partially supported by the national, the NEA. And we have with us their artistic director, who is Charlotte Boy Christensen.
And Charlotte is the person who choreographs the dances for the Ryrie Woodbury Dance Company. And come Thursday, you'll see her crew's performance in all its glory. And good morning to you.
Good morning.
And you are from Denmark?
Yeah, originally from Copenhagen in Denmark, but I've now been the artistic director of Ryrie Woodbury Dance Company for the last 10 years. Mm-hmm. Our company, I think, is pretty exceptional in terms of the fact that it's been around for 50 years, which makes it pretty unusual anywhere for a company, especially a contemporary dance company, to be able to survive for such a long time. And the performance that we have lined up for you guys on Thursday is a combination not only of my work, but also of renowned choreographers, Larry Kigwin out of New York, who does really kind of show-type dance, and he's doing a phenomenal piece. He actually went on to choreograph the off-Broadway version of Rent, so the piece that he's done for us is kind of a precursor to that. And then we're also doing a piece by a renowned performance artist, Anne Carlson, and also a choreographer, Carol Armitage, also out of New York.
Now, Charlotte might find it a bit curious that an internationally acclaimed dance company is based in Salt Lake City.
Yeah, me too. but Salt Lake City and Utah in general has a very long tradition for dance and dance education. And Shirley Ryrie and Joanne Woodbury, who initially started this company, were teachers and professors out of the University of Utah. So they wanted to stay in Salt Lake City. And so the company has been supported locally and nationally as well as internationally for the last 50 years.
And you've been there how long?
10.
10 years.
Yes.
By way of Copenhagen.
By way of London, New York, yes, and Copenhagen. So it was a little bit of a culture shock to move to Salt Lake City, but it's been an exciting journey so far.
It's a beautiful city, isn't it?
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Yeah. Well, Thursday night, 7:30, Baton Rouge River Center Theater for the Performing Arts. You'll, if you wish, see the Ryrie Woodbury Dance Company of Salt Lake City with the fabulous Charlotte Boy Christensen. Christensen is the person who'll be choreographing the dances. But Molly, you have some other events that are coinciding with this.
Oh, absolutely. Their residency here will take them to Forest Park Elementary and McKinley Middle Magnet School. Also, after the performance on Thursday night, the dancers will be remaining on stage or coming on stage to do a question and answer session. So this is a great opportunity for dancers and young choreographers in our community to come out and talk to them and ask them questions. They'll also be teaching two master classes today and tomorrow at 6 o'clock at the Dancers Workshop, 10745 Linkwood Court.
All right. The company was founded in 1964.
Yes.
So you've been around for 48 years.
Yeah. Actually, I think it's 63. It was the year 63, 64. That's why we're sort of celebrating our 50th next year.
Well, that would be 63. But it's a long time, and you've stood the test of time.
Yeah.
Where are your performers? Where are they generally from? They're not from Salt Lake City for the most part, are
well,
they?
Well, actually, previously they were, but now we've got like a mixed group of like, one of them is from Texas, one of them is from Oklahoma, we've got somebody from Georgia, we've got two people from California, we've got a Canadian dancer, so they're from all over the place. And I think I want to say in terms of this performance that, I mean, sometimes people get intimidated by the idea of contemporary dance, but this has such athleticism and physicality to it, and I think there's something for everybody in this specific performance. There's humor, you know, there is, I think it will engage people in many different ways.
Well, the event is Thursday night at the River Center, October 4th, the 69th birthday of Buddy Romer, by the way, former governor of Louisiana. He might be in attendance. I know he likes these sorts of things.
I hope so.
Molly Bookman, good to see you as always. And
thank you.
Thank you for joining us, and hope you have a good stay in our city. Charlotte Boy Christensen.
Thank you.
Of the Ryrie Woodbury Dance Company. And we'll send it back to WRKF. We certainly need and want and ask for your support. So please keep the phones ringing, and thank you for what you've done to make the shows continue on our station.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.